What's up, my friend? Welcome to the Finding Direction podcast. My name is Stu Massengill, and I'm here every single week to bring you a passionate guest or message dedicated to helping you find your purpose so that you can live a life full of passion, fulfillment, and happiness. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for hanging out with me, and let's dive in. Welcome back, my friend, to another episode here on Finding Direction. This week, I'm sitting down with Dr. Robert Enright, a man, a myth, a legend behind this word forgiveness. To give you a little bit of his background, Dr. Robert Enright, he is the founder of the International Forgiveness Institute, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to disseminating knowledge about forgiveness and community renewal through forgiveness. He is the first person ever to publish a study on person-to-person forgiveness. In 1989 is when he did it. He is also the first person to publish research on forgiveness therapy, and he developed a 20-step process called the Process Model of Forgiving, and he's also been called the Forgiveness Trailblazer by Time Magazine. Clearly, again, a legend in his own right. He is also the author or editor of 8 books and over, wait for it, 190 publications centered on social development and the psychology of forgiveness. He's been doing this work for now over 35 years. Truly has dedicated his life to this work. And on this episode, a few things you can expect is we talk about the forgiveness gym, which is something that is just so beautiful, how he went into what the forgiveness gym is, how to start building muscle in the forgiveness gym, how to start working out in the gym of forgiveness. And we talk about the power of teaching children forgiveness as well and the impact that it can have on their life. And we dive into so many other things as well as his journey and how he even kind of stumbled into this, being the first person that ever did this and saw so much, talk from people on how he was crazy, how he shouldn't do this. And clearly he pursued it and it went well. So he talks about that journey as well. There's a lot of goodness you can expect in this episode. And if you have not yet, make sure you hit that subscribe button so you can stay hanging out with us every single week on this show. All right, my friend, without further ado, let's dive in. Dr. Robert Enright, thank you so much for being here. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
I'm honored to be here. Thanks, Stu, for asking me.
Absolutely. And so as we dive into our conversation, obviously forgiveness is a huge part of your life work. And you've been doing it for, I could be wrong on this, you can correct me, over 35 years, I believe. So quite a bit of time.
That's correct.
And Right. Let's say that you could leave the world with one thing that they could understand with forgiveness. You get to give people one message about forgiveness, all your work disappears, and there's one message you can leave people about forgiveness. I know there's a lot of work you've done, so if there's one thing you could leave people with when it comes to forgiveness, what would that be?
It would be this. Every one of us experiences injustices against other people in our life. No matter how hard we try, this imperfect world, people are going to hurt us. So the big question is, how are you going to heal from deep injustices against you? And education, society, nowhere is there any explicit and deep sense of how to heal from grave injustices. And I have come to realize that it's forgiveness that's the strongest healer. It cures the negative, toxic effects of unjust treatment. And I would like people to realize that and to start planting forgiveness in their own lives, families, and communities for good.
Beautifully said. And it is an interesting thing that people will face injustice of all different size, shapes. And I know that's a big part of what got you into this work as well, right? Is realizing like that the solve for injustice is forgiveness, in a sense. And I'm curious, how would you say somebody starts to go through the, or even before this actually, how does somebody know that they need forgiveness in their life? Like, are there any things that stick out for someone? Like, I may go through my life and I don't really feel like I need a ton of forgiveness in my life. I don't have, you know, grudges. I don't have, you know, I haven't had any like crazy things happen that felt super unjust. But like, how does someone, or how can someone tell that maybe they need to let forgiveness come into their life?
It's when people start realizing their inner world is disrupted, when they start realizing that their heart isn't right, that something's wrong, maybe the sleep pattern is disrupted, or distractions when talking with others, or kind of general annoyances as a typical pattern that can occur when people have been treated very unjustly by others and haven't been healed from it. So if something all of a sudden doesn't seem right, preoccupations, lack of energy, disrupting the internal world, it's a good idea to look within and ask this question. Has anything happened in my life, and it doesn't have to be yesterday, it could be 10 years ago, where I have really been thrown down into a pit by other people, and I've never quite ever climbed up out of that, and that kind of experience, while over, and we can't build a time machine to go back and correct it, but the effects of that, even 10 years ago, are alive and well and living in my heart. And if the answer to that is yes, something happened, and I am disrupted, then forgiveness might be something to consider.
Beautiful question. I love it. So someone answers this question and they go, I have something there, right? Big or small. What's the process somebody can start going through to bring forgiveness into their life and then use it to create a sense of healing, if we will?
Okay, the first thing is to realize you've been treated unjustly and that the effects have now been within you. And that takes kind of a humble stance too, because what the person has to say is, someone else has had a lot of power over me. Someone else has affected my internal world.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people are in denial about that. Oh, that no one can have that kind of power over me. I'm strong. I can take it. I can take everything. Yeah. But not necessarily, and that doesn't make us bad people, it's simply because others have treated us unjustly, but simply being aware of this, that there's now an internal disruption in my life, which is prior to forgiveness, is a big deal. Because of this idea of a lack of humility and not wanting to even admit that you've been hurt that badly.
Yeah, it's like your ego.
Once you have, it's kind of like an ego issue. That's right.
Yeah.
And that can block healing. So once a person can truthfully say, I've been hurt, then comes a decision. What path are you going to take to heal? Some people talk to a good friend. Some people hit the surf when the surf's up. Some go on a good jog. Some go to therapy. Okay. Some ride their bike. There's a lot of ways to try and affect healing. But most of these, when we've been crushed by the injustice of others, work only to a point. And so people will get to a point where they have to make a decision, the fork in the road, if you will, to either go down all kinds of different traditional popular paths or the untried path of forgiveness. And they have to make a decision. And at that point, we usually go over what the definition is. What is it when you're going to forgive?
Right.
What does it mean? What is this path? And so basically, if I had to describe it in a sentence, I'd say forgiveness is gulp, gasp, you'll have to stop me after you hear this sentence, being good to those who are not good to you. And that sounds outrageous. But we go over what forgiveness is not. You're not excusing what the other did by being good to the other. You're not forgetting lest it happen again. You may or may not reconcile with that person. If that person keeps hitting you over the head with a frying pan, then you're going to get out of the way and not interact with the person as the person keeps hitting you. And you are not going to abandon the quest for justice. So many people think that when you forgive, you cannot seek justice. Well, no, You can let both grow up at the same time. You can try to be good to those who are not good to you while saying, stop hitting me with the frying pan. That's the decision phase of forgiveness. And then we hit what I call the work phase of forgiveness. It's what I call hitting the forgiveness gym. You become what I call forgivingly fit, where you roll up your sleeves, you go into the forgiveness gym, and you do forgiveness workouts. And the first kind of forgiveness workout is to what I call expand your story of who the other is. Because when you're treated very, very badly by others, there's a tendency to stereotype that person and to narrow your view of that person exclusively only to those hurts against you. So you define the person by those actions. Forgiveness expands it. We ask questions such as this. Is it possible that this person who hurt you is also very hurt inside and very wounded, not because of you, but maybe something that happened in the past while growing up, for example? Maybe there was a parent who was overly harsh. And maybe this person has wounds that are unhealed and they dumped the truck onto you. Is it possible? And then we ask questions about common personhood, common humanity. Is it true you are both persons who are special, unique, and irreplaceable in this world? Well, there'll never be another person like you ever again when you're gone. Most people say, yeah, it's true. Well, is it also true of the one who hurt you? Does this person have special, unique characteristics because this person is a human being? The person will die one day. If you cut, you bleed. That person, if that person cuts, that person bleeds. You both need adequate rest. So you see, you start inducing a sense of personhood into that other. And then we go to another level. If the person has more of a spiritual perspective, then we would, but we wouldn't go to this level if the person doesn't. For example, if someone's Jewish, you could ask this question about the one who hurt you. Is it true that everyone is made in the image and likeness of God? And that's in the first book of the Jewish scriptures, Genesis. It says that. And then it's repeated there. And so, yeah, it says it right there, the Jewish person might say. So then you say, well, is it true then that you are made in the image and likeness of God? Well, yeah. Is it true, drum roll, please, that the one who hurt you is made in the image and likeness of God? At which point some people say, oh boy, I wish I didn't know that. It's hard for me to see all these new perspectives. But when you put them all together, there's a tendency for the heart to start softening a little bit toward the other. We call it compassion. Suffering along with another person who's a hurting person, who shares humanity with me. And see, that's the beginning of getting rid of the negative in the heart. And at that point, we ask the person then to what we call stand in the pain or bear the pain. So you don't throw your own anger onto unsuspecting others, like other friends who haven't hurt you, or family members, even to the person themselves. And then once the person gets strong enough to stand in the pain, knowing that the pain now will not crush you as you stand in that pain, we ask the person who's forgiving to give a gift to the one who hurt you. That's really tapping into the nature of forgiveness. Remember the one sentence of what it is, being good to those who are not good to you? So it might be a smile, a returned phone call, or a text, or emailing the person where you haven't done that for 2 years. It's doing something kind for the other, the paradox being that as you do that, your heart is the one that's healed. And our science shows that. As you give to the other, as outrageous as that sounds, you begin to heal. And then to people wrapping up the journey of forgiveness as they become forgivingly fit, they develop new purpose and meaning in life. They realize that they're more sensitive to other suffering. They realize part of their purpose in life is to ease others' suffering. And that happens a lot. They don't become therapists, but they know in their everyday life, they see the pain in the other's face, in the other's eyes. And there's a tendency to move toward helping others with their own pain. And that's when you see the healing that occurs within the forgiver that can be unprecedented in psychotherapy.
Dang. That is a beautiful, beautiful breakdown, I think, for anybody to use. And I love the idea of a fitness gym, right? It's like very easy to metaphorically picture. It's like, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to lift a couple forgiveness weights today. And I think part of it too is, right, it's like you may not go into the forgiveness gym the first time and get through all the workouts. You may go in and the first time you struggle to lift the first weight of like, okay, can I empathize with this person? It's like, I'm not going to get that rep all the way up. So maybe you come back the next day or the next week and you just continue building those muscles. I think that's so beautifully said. Oh, Robert, for some reason, I can no longer hear you.
How about now?
Okay, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Interesting.
There was a button I pushed and here we are. Okay, so maybe I should start again with that issue. Should I do that?
The issue of...
It's not a quick fix. I was saying that for... Let me start here and see what you think.
Perfect.
You're right, Stu, about going into the gym in this sense. Forgiveness is not a quick fix where you lift one weight. You say, I'm glad I'm done with that. Now I'm physically fit. How long does it take to truly become physically fit? It takes months.
For sure.
But you start slowly, you build up, and it's the same way with walking this path of fitness in forgiveness. You start it slowly. You start to see the humanity in the other. You might have to pull back the next day or two or three because it's too much for you. But as you keep going and practicing it, over time, you actually get stronger, more competent, more thorough in forgiveness, and therefore you affect greater healing within your own heart.
Mm. Love it. And I think one thing that sticks out to me too, you know, as you're talking about this, is the quote of like, hurt people hurt people.
Yep, that's right.
And it's like,
hurt people hurt people.
Yeah. And it's like, if you don't allow forgiveness into your life and you get hurt, yes, you've been hurt. But if you're hurt, like, you want to open up the awareness around the fact that like, you may be the next person in the chain to then hurt. Because if you're hurt, you may be the hurt person that hurts people, which is... I just think another interesting perspective on looking at forgiveness, that it's like, well, you want to put forgiveness in so you can heal yourself, but you also want to bring in forgiveness into your life so you don't start hurting other people.
Very important insight, because what can happen in families if someone has been hurt in the past, then a child now can be the recipient of a parent's hurt. That child grows up, enters into a relationship, maybe has children, passes that on, and the children's children are still carrying the discontent and the anger that might have happened generations before, and it's still alive and living in the hearts of those who've come long after us. But forgiveness can put a stop to that and stop the cycles of discontent and disrespect in families, in communities, and even between communities.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, sort of in this conversation, is like, one of the things that you do as part of your work is teaching children forgiveness. And it's so interesting. I had a mother. Well, I have a mother. She's great. And she grew up teaching children gremlin taming. And gremlin taming, what it is in a sense, is there's that monster in your mind that's sitting on your shoulder that's saying, you're not good enough. You can't do it. You suck. You're stupid. You look ugly, right? All these things. And what she would do in our elementary schools is she would come in and she would teach us about, hey, this gremlin, this thing that's talking on your shoulder, that's what it's called. It's a gremlin. And here's how you start to deal with that. I'm a product of her teaching this because I was her son, right? And there's other people she would teach in our classes that, like, it's made such an impact because we learn this thing at such a young age. And so I'm sort of curious in two senses. Like, one, what do you think is the power in sort of doing that same thing, teaching children when they're young this idea of forgiveness? And then sort of the second part of the question is, like, how do you teach someone when they're a young person, a young child, like, how do you teach them about forgiveness?
Sure. Well, first of all, with regard to teaching forgiveness and the why question, why would we want to do that?
Yeah.
Many, many people with whom I speak have used the word forgiveness. They're very familiar with the word, but they do not understand it as adults. A very typical misunderstanding of forgiveness is you're just moving on. Well, you can move on with a hatred toward another or an indifference to the personhood of the other, dismissing the other, and you're moving on. But I have found you can get in your car, you can go 80 miles an hour down the highway, and you might be 500 miles away from that person, and you have moved on by moving away, but that person is still in your heart.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And so what we have to do is get children ready to understand more deeply what forgiveness is, be aware of it, knowing that it is being good to others, that you're not excusing, forgetting, necessarily reconciling, and you're not throwing justice under the bus.
Right.
Practice it a little bit. For example, in the playground, when one of your classmates pushes you down and skins your knee, or bumps into you in the lunch line, and practice it with the little things, which again starts getting forgiveness in your heart. It's starting the forgiveness journey, starting children to become a little forgivingly fit without necessarily running a marathon here, so that when they are now adults and the storms of life can hit them, they are ready. Without being ready, it can be extremely hard. I talked to a 35-year-old woman recently whose husband just abandoned her. And she said to me, I now have two children. I have to get a job. I want to forgive, and I don't know how. But had I known about forgiveness, it would be much easier.
Yeah.
That's the point, to get children ready for the storms of life. And isn't that what education is anyway? To get people ready for life, that's why we get them to read and to add and subtract, to get them ready to balance checkbooks. We get them ready for certain things in life, in education, but we don't get them ready for the grave hurts against them. I think that needs to be there.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you do it? Well, first of all, you do not make forgiveness with children a therapy session. You do not have them bare their hearts with the other children. What we do with forgiveness with children is introduce them to the idea of forgiveness through stories, okay? Mm-hmm. As an example, maybe about 10 years or so ago, there was a film that was popular called Horton Hears a Who, which was based on a storybook by Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
And in that book, Horton says, a person is a person no matter how small. And so he was showing personhood for tiny little who's on a flower. And he also was showing personhood toward jungle animals who were abusing him. He still saw the personhood in the animals who were abusing him. We introduce that book to six-year-olds. And we ask, a person is a person no matter how small. Well, is a person even if this child doesn't know the lessons of school right now, or someone who might be a little angry in school and pushed you? Are they all persons, including you? And so the point is simply to introduce them to forgiveness through story. And we have curriculum guides, actually, that we have built, professionally built, from pre-kindergarten or age 4 through senior year in high school, age 18, and we've had responses for these from our International Forgiveness Institute from over 30 countries. We're working intensively in Belfast, Northern Ireland, where there has been conflict, in Galilee in Israel, where there is conflict, in Taiwan, where there's conflict there in the Asian cultures. We're in Greece, we're in the Philippines, we're in many different areas of the world because teachers are now asking for this. And we train teachers up, but it's always teaching children and adolescents about forgiveness rather than forgiving, which we save for near the middle high school and beyond, like maybe beginning late in the sophomore year, junior and senior, because now they're mature enough to really handle that.
Right.
But before that, no. It's more, let's see what these story characters are doing when there's conflict within the story.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful way to understand it. I like the Horton Hu example. It's a beautiful, simple way to just get them to understand that, like, hey, people are people. Right. And, you know, that, getting back to kind of the human spirit of, like, that's someone, they may hurt you, forgive them, and apply, obviously, these other things you've talked about. You know, I'm curious if we change the page a little bit and dive into your journey. How did you kind of stumble upon forgiveness? I mean, it's something that, you know, again, for over 35 years, you have dove deep into this work. You know, when you found it, something in that said, like, I'm going to keep doing this. And so sort of two questions is one, how'd you kind of stumble into forgiveness? And two, like, what engaged you in it so much that you've done it for 35 years?
Okay. Well, my story about forgiving as a life's calling is this. I got my PhD at the University of Minnesota. And at the time, that was in the 1970s, back in the Stone Age. The popular idea in terms of moral development in the child development area of scholarship was thinking about and doing research on how children, adolescents, and adults think about fairness, how they think about being fair to other people. That was hugely popular. And I was an obedient servant to academia. I absorbed that. I did a dissertation on that. I then came to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I continued that kind of research.
Yeah.
And I got tenure doing that, making up scales for how children think about distributing goods fairly, for example. And then I woke up one day, and I asked myself a very dangerous question. Who am I helping with my research? And the answer was, Enright, you're helping no one. And so I decided at that point, I used the expression, I threw all of my research over a cliff. I've never gone back and read one sentence of that which was very good to me, where I got tenure doing this. Yeah. I got a doctoral degree doing this. I got grants. I was a fair-haired academic because I was obedient to that which academia told me was worth studying. And so now here I was in a publish or perish university, University of Wisconsin-Madison, without a topic for research. And so I thought, okay, I study justice themes, how children and adolescents think about justice. But what happens when the reverse occurs? Where they've been treated unjustly, when they've been thrown down in the pit by others' unfair treatment. How do they get out of that pit? So that's an interesting question. It seems to me that forgiveness probably is one of the ways to get out of that. And I thought, oh, for sure, because psychology is part of the helping professions, there's probably a lot of research published on this. And so I actually had to walk all the way to the library, Stu, in 1985. I couldn't Google it because it didn't exist. And I asked the librarian, please give me, through your big, large mainframe computer, all of the references on published research on people forgiving other people. And she said, okay, I'll be back. A half hour later, she came back with a blank sheet of paper. So there's nothing that I could find in terms of people forgiving other people that's published. And I had a friend do the same thing at the University of Kansas around the same time I was doing this. And so he also came up with a blank sheet of paper. And so I thought, whoa, this is interesting. Nothing has ever been published on person-to-person forgiving. And that was 1985. So I started talking with graduate students about that topic. I said, what do you think about making an entirely new move in the social sciences to studying forgiveness? And within about a month, I had people from Greece and Saudi Arabia and Taiwan and the United States and Korea, all over the world, sitting around in what we call the Friday Forgiveness Seminar. That's still going, by the way. We're still meeting with a different cast of characters. And we asked three questions that we're still struggling with, by the way. What is forgiveness? How do you go about it? Which you and I have discussed so far. And what happens when you do forgive? And so when we started studying this, you have to realize that academia can be very conforming, that everything is fine. They talk about academic freedom, but I have found that you're free as long as you study what most people expect you to study. Yeah. And so a firestorm actually developed in academia. People told me I was crazy to study something as soft and irrelevant and ridiculous as forgiveness. And I had one student come to me and she was pale with fright. And she said, I just talked with another professor who said, don't work with Enright anymore. He's ruined his career studying forgiveness and he will ruin your career and you will never get a job as a professor if you stay with him. And she asked me, she looked me in the eye and said, is that true? And I took a deep breath and said, well, you know, this is so new. I don't know. It's possible you will not get a job in academia. And to her courageous way, she stuck with it. She's now a tenured professor at another university. That's her revenge. And so there you go. But what we did is we stuck with it despite fierce opposition to leave and not do it. But as soon as we started doing scientific studies, where we randomized people to a forgiveness condition where they hit the forgiveness gym versus a control group that did other things, and we got great results favoring forgiveness, to their credit, people who are academics began to take a look at this more seriously, more gently, and in a more accepting way. And so now there are literally, Stu, thousands of researchers studying forgiveness all over the world.
So cool.
There have been a number of conferences. I was just at Harvard in April with a conference on forgiveness there. I was just at Bar-Ilan University in Israel in February for a conference on forgiveness. And so they're popping up within academia. And so what you have to do is don't listen to the mainstream. Don't listen to that which you're supposed to just have complete obedience to that. And if you find something that's going to, you think is going to make a difference to the human condition, go for it.
Let's go.
Because, you know, I've been doing this now for over 30 years, over 35 years, as you say, and I have never had a boring day in all that time. I don't even know what the word boring means.
That's awesome.
Because I talk to so many different people from all over the world who either want help in their forgiving or want help in their research on forgiving. And it's a lively day every day because I know I am putting goodness in the world for hurting people.
Beautiful. I love it. That is amazing. That is so true. You know, you plant your flag in the ground and say, this is something that'll make a difference in the human condition. And you never looked back. So truly beautiful and inspiring. And, you know, Dr. Enright, if anybody, you know, we're going to start to wrap up here, but if anybody is listening to this today and they're going, man, I really want to dive more into this work. I want to learn more about forgiveness. I want to understand this more. I want to bring more of this into my life. Where's the best place for them to find you, your work, and kind of just take a deeper dive into some of this stuff?
Sure. Well, we actually formed a nonprofit organization in 1994 because there were so many requests for information about forgiveness. And it's called the International Forgiveness Institute. And you can find it online, internationalforgiveness.com.
Awesome.
And so they'll be able to find me there or at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Just go to the directory and there I'll be.
Thank you.
And then I also have 3 self-help books published for the general public. So people can actually start reading about forgiveness. And then in the reading, we have exercises like you and I talked about, where you look at the inner world and the discontent, and you look at the decision, and you widen your perspective on the other, and you bear the pain and are good to the other. And it's all written in these books. One is called Forgiveness is a Choice, because it really is a choice. It shouldn't be demanded of you or forced upon you.
Right.
And another is called The Forgiving Life, where it becomes more like part of you, your identity, who you are. And then those are published by the American Psychological Association. And the one by Norton in New York is called 8 Keys to Forgiveness. But any one of those should be helpful to people who want to walk a path of forgiveness.
Love it. Well, thank you for sharing those. We'll put them all in the show notes too, so everybody has easy access to get them. And my last question to you is a question we ask to all of our guests, because we want to help our listener find direction, but we really believe in doing it through some sort of action. And so my question to you would just be, what would you say is one thing our listener can do in the next 24 to 48 hours to start finding direction?
To start finding direction, the question would be, do when you hear the definition of forgiveness, to be good to those who are not good to you, do you need time for that to resonate in your mind and heart, or does it click for you and make sense? And if it makes sense, I would suggest you take a little bit of this forgiveness gym work to become forgivingly fit, open it a little bit, and commit to do no harm to someone at whom you're annoyed. So if you can, see, we're not asking you to love the person. Yeah. We're not asking you to be gushy toward the person or even good to the person other than something, avoid the negative. Can you commit to do no harm directly to someone at whom you're annoyed and could be disrespectful, for example? That's the beginning of opening the forgiveness gym door.
Love it. Amazing. Well, Dr. Emright, it has been a privilege and an honor to have this conversation with you. I want to say thank you again so much for being here and just massively appreciate you and everything that you're doing.
Thanks so much. I appreciate what you're doing too, Stu. Thanks for putting good into the world.
Absolutely. Congratulations, my friend, on crushing it through another episode here on Finding Direction. Make sure you give yourself a pat on the back, a round of applause, because you are one of the few who is not willing to settle for less than a life that lights up your soul, and that is absolutely every single time something worth celebrating. As always, I want to say thank you so much for joining me on this week's episode. I hope you took something from Dr. Enright, and I hope you start getting inside of that forgiveness gym. Start working out if you need to, and start building some muscle in that area. All right, take one thing from today and go start applying it in your life. Other than that, my friend, have a beautiful, outstanding, incredible rest of your day. And if you do not want to go anywhere, don't feel like you need to. I have another episode coming up right after this that you are more than welcome to hang around for. All right, my friend, I will talk to you next time. Take care.